Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hello, I'm Sarah Pascoe.
Hello, I'm Carriad Lloyd.
And we're weird about books.
We love to read.
We read too much.
We talk too much.
About the too much that we've read.
Which is why we've created
The Weirdos Book Club.
Join us!
A space for the lonely outsider to feel accepted and appreciated.
A place for the person who'd love to be in a real book club but doesn't like wine or nibbles.
Or being around other people.
Is that you? Join us.
Check out our Instagram at Sarah and Carriad's Weirdos Book Club for the upcoming books we're going to be discussing.
You can read along
and share your opinions.
Or just skulk around in your raincoat like the weirdo you are.
Thank you for reading with us. We like reading with you. This week's book guest is The Calaby Code by Johnny Sweet.
What's it about? It follows Edward Jevons, a chronic people pleaser, and his very toxic relationship with his wealthy friends from university.
What qualifies it for the Weirdos Book Club? Well, Edward has extreme social anxiety and catastrophic rages, which does lead to a lot of weird things happening. In this episode, we discuss
murder,
class,
acknowledgements,
Woodhouse,
lockdowns,
and Boris Johnson.
And joining us this week is Johnny Sweet.
Johnny is an actor and writer who also currently has a film out at the moment, Wicked Little Letters, in the cinema, and this is his first novel.
The Calaby Code by Johnny Sweet is out now.
Johnny Sweet.
Johnny Hello. Sweet. Johnny Sweet. You said it like you're about to do a chant there.
Yeah.
Johnny Sweet sounds like a character in a book, don't you think?
Yeah, when I first saw your name, I thought it wasn't real.
Like, did you?
Yeah, because I was like, no one's called that.
Or like a comedy, comedy pseudonym.
But that is your real name.
It is, actually.
And it's a great name. You've written a great book called The Calaby Code.
As soon as I started reading this, Carriad, I was worried you were going to be scared.
Yeah.
Really?
So I don't like, I'm very easy scared.
And it's good to tell our listeners that, because it's a really brilliant book.
And I don't like any thrillers. Or anything scary, anything like, oh, what's going to happen?
Yeah.
I find that very stressful.
Doesn't like being tantalised.
No. Okay.
You don't like, you're not comfortable with the thrill, I think, of
but
a thriller.
But can I tell you something?
Yeah.
It started and I thought, oh God.
I was worried about
Here we go. And then
I thought someone would be sleeping with the light on.
Put nightlight.
That's crazy. I never thought my book would produce that kind of reaction. Actually.
But then I had the experience of someone who never reads thrillers being like, oh my God, what's going to happen?
Yeah.
And I kept saying, I can't put it down.
Yes.
I can't put it. And I thought, this is how people feel for thrillers.
I'm not a big thriller. I'm not a huge,
going to be my first question because...
Because Sarah loves them.
Oh, I really love them. So to write one, I would assume, someone loves one so
fan
much.
Fan of the genre. Yeah,
fan of the genre.
I like Patricia Highsmith.
Well, of course,
there's tiny, fairly substantial.
Oh yeah,
Highsmith.
Did you just cut and paste? I tried to.
What's the one? The Jude Law one.
Talented Mr. Ripley.
Yeah.
Oh yes, I yeah.
That's similar.
True.
If you were recommending this book to someone, which I will be, which we all will be, you might say, like Talented Mr. Ripley, you have this outsider wanting to get inside someone's life that just seems so brilliant, and also why do they deserve these wonderful decadent
things? Yeah, we should say, shouldn't we, a little bit more. Do you want to just, can you, have you got a sentence yet of like, this is what it's about?
I should have, shouldn't I?
It's very hard.
When people ask me that, I'd always go, if I could have said it in a sentence, why'd I have bothered writing an entire
book? What I meant was, you've done so many interviews,
yeah,
like that sometimes you've had to perfect the sentence.
I think Talented Mr. Ripley meets Brideshead Revisited is a succinct...
With the seasoning of Woodhouse.
Yeah, it is also... Woodhouse. Someone said the other day, PG Woodhouse meets Coen Brothers.
Oh,
directed
yeah.
by the Coen Brothers.
That's
and
a
I
good
like
call.
That.
Yeah.
So yes. it is like that. It's from it's someone who kind of who goes to university from an ordinary-ish background and falls in with an aristocratic, stellar set and kind of becomes slightly, sort of to keep in with them, becomes slightly Jeeves-ish in his in his
makes
relationship.
Makes himself very useful.
Yeah, deferential, servile.
And that's
did
the only
you, and you, did you go to Cambridge?
Yes. There are overlaps.
Yeah, I wasn't suggesting
we don't
that
have
the
to
character.
Dance around it.
I wasn't suggesting that the character do, but
and what aristocrats were mean to you?
Stick it in the notes. Stick it in the podcast notes.
So I just I just thought because we went to Sussex, we went to the same university, which was not like. The people who go to this university.
No.
Poor you.
But people I know, as in so people from backgrounds more similar to mine who went to Oxford, people who had incredible educations, very bright, but found it, you know, difficult to be at a university where so many people had come from money.
Yes.
Weirdly, I guess I did draw on things, but weirdly I think I was reading Woodhouse and thinking, does Jeeves never just get furious? That was kind of my way in. It was about that kind
wonderful,
of...
Yes.
And it was also like...
And your character does question that sort of the anger of Jeeves.
And is obsessed with reading when he's upset. He goes back to
it's
Woodhouse.
It's a calming, weirdly, it's a calming...
Be all right.
Because Woodhouse is sort of apolitical.
Yeah.
And it's very sort of simple and silly.
You kind of... It's Disney film-esque. You know it's going to be okay.
Exactly.
Like it soothes the soul.
Yeah, and those political discomfort doesn't really encroach on it. And that's quite comforting. But I was, but I guess I had come into contact with it, and I was also tutoring a lot. When I read Woodhouse, I was tutoring really, really rich children in Mayfair, and that was getting me quite angry. So I think there was some
as a character
of that.
In the book.
But
there are lots of those things.
Doing jobs outside of, you know, acting or comedy, which you have to do quite often for
stuff,
money, the ego really struggles with it.
Yeah.
Really does.
Yeah.
Because... you're being paid to do that job, so you are that job while you're there.
Yeah, there's no such thing as a means to an end when you're doing a job.
You're the teacher, you're the tutor, and it's really hard for the ego.
And they did treat me like a butler. They would be like, you're tutoring at the moment, but could you hang up this, could you hang this painting afterwards? I'd be like, and my personality was very much like, but of course. And would you need me for the evening? So that was feed. But also, there's also a thing about reading Woodhouse now where you're like, all those country house novels where you're like, there's something kind of icky about reading Woodhouse now. I think where's the money come from for that country house?
Yeah, we're living at a point where I feel similar, even though I love Jane Austen.
Yeah.
There's sometimes you hit this wall of like, but what? Where are these houses? Who built them? Like you can't ignore that now. We're living in a world where you're too aware of it.
Well, that's what's lovely about your book is that, I mean, because there's such a underbelly to it. Mm. So, you know, you meet a rich family in this lovely sort of decadent house, and then someone does go on Wikipedia to find out where the family got their money from. So there's no like wondering.
Yeah, yeah.
That you tell us, oh, it's from sugar.
It's bad.
Yeah, it's
sugar.
Bad.
That doesn't look so good. He says.
Yeah,
doesn't it?
It's So I was thinking about that. I mean, I think I was finishing it when Boris Johnson was on TV a lot during COVID, and the Edward Colston statue was chucked into.
Yeah.
And I was sort of, there definitely was a sort of. Boris is basically Jeeves, and that's how he kind of gets away with it. He sort of goes, well, dum-de-dum, and that's kind of his get-out clause. Yeah,
I met a young person yesterday.
Congratulations.
So thank you.
Mm. Were they aware they met you?
Well, they had grown up in Uxbridge when Boris Johnson was the MP, and he'd come into their school several times. So a young person talking about their response to Boris Johnson, which was obviously... he's hilarious, like this buffoon, this clown, this silliness. They felt really, I guess, akin to him with his messy hair. And he's all
like Mr. Tumble.
Pack lunch.
An MP Mr. Tumble.
The shock to become an adult. And went, who elected him?
Oh, God.
Yeah. It is shocking.
It is shocking.
Oh, it's still shocking.
But I think it's interesting because there is a kind of dynamic where we enable those sort of bumbling aristocrats. And it is sort of because of... There is a Jeevishness to them, and there is a complicated distrust, repulsion, but also awe and adoration.
It's very familiar.
Yeah.
The pecking order,
the
hierarchy,
class
the rules of
in
the
this
establishment.
Country, is so deep.
So what we're saying about the comfort of sort of Jeeves and Woodhouse to the reader is you know, instilled in all of us. Yeah. There are upstairs and there is downstairs, and you know where you are.
Yeah. My sister-in-law is Japanese, and she just put it so bluntly. She was like, but English people, as soon as they meet another English person, they're trying to work out, am I better or worse than them? And then they feel better. Yeah. And I thought, well, you put it like that. Yes, it's awful.
Yeah, it does sound bad.
Yeah, she was like, Japanese people, the main thing is to be like, I want you to feel that I have been respectful to you before I know who you are. But she was like, English, it's like, well, before I'm polite to you, who are you? Do yeah. I need to bother? And I thought, yeah, that's bad, isn't it? She'd skewered us good there.
So the beginning of the book
is we've jumped around. We haven't even told anybody what the book is about.
I think it's because I don't want to do any spoilers.
Well, it's about Edward. That's okay. Not a spoiler.
Okay.
Who, as we said, not from posh background, with these aristocratic, and they've left university.
Best friends from university.
Best friend. They've left, they're living in London, and everyone, its careers are taking off as you'd expect for aristocratic people. And Edward is trying to fit in with two particular best friends.
Yes, a boy and a girl.
A boy and a girl. I don't think it's a spoiler to say he's very fond of the girl.
No.
Okay.
Yeah.
You could do a klaxon when there's a spoiler.
He's very fond of the girl.
But the very early scenes, the establishing scenes, yes. are in the bar of the Alameda Theatre.
Oh, God, yes. So that was very triggering.
It was really, yeah. really, really fantastic because yeah. it made me so uncomfortable. Mm.
Great.
And you describe so brilliantly what happens in lots of places where there's a cluster of creative people where someone seems to have their eyes on you and simultaneously elsewhere.
Yeah, yeah.
And I liked Edward's description as well of how drawn he is to someone, you know, there's the richest person in the room and then the most rich and famous person in the room or the most talented, and how it's like, moths to the flames. People yeah. are just, and I thought...
The body language of everyone yeah. in the space is facing towards them.
It's quite nice to have someone be honest about it because it made you go, yeah, it's quite human reaction, isn't it? It's yeah. not like, oh, like, fuck's sake.
Like in the Pleasance Bar in Edinburgh, which is probably where I have had that sensation most. So many of the conversations are about... how shit it is because everyone's just looking over your shoulder to
while
see
they look
who
over
has,
your shoulder.
Oh my God, Greg Davies has come in.
Yeah.
But it is exciting when it was good when Greg came in.
So everyone's just talking about it but still doing it. Like you observe it and can't rise above it.
That's why I sort of sometimes I, it does, the book kind of has those, like you say, those political bits in them, but really it's kind of a book about that feeling.
Yeah.
And that kind of social anxiety and the sense everyone has, and like you say, it doesn't have to be class, it can be fame or power of any sort, of just sort of slightly people pleasy, agreeing with almost anything that they say just by default and then leaving thinking, God, I don't know what I've done there really.
When I was reading it, Jenny, because I was thinking, how does Johnny know? Because you're so popular and successful.
I'm a great
guy. Had the same thought.
Did you?
I was like,
but Johnny doesn't know about us dweebs on the outside.
Yeah,
I'm not as bad as you two. Look, let's be honest.
No, I think he's someone who everybody wants. He's the person who comes in, everyone's like, oh, John Sweet's here, I'm going to talk to him.
One newcomer in Edinburgh. Yeah, literally, first year. Won it, Edinburgh, tick. What's next? Hollywood. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
How do you know what it's like to be a dweeb?
I agree with all this. No, I don't know what it's like to be a dweeb. Okay. I know what it's like to be socially anxious.
Oh, okay.
But I'm hip.
You're hip, socially anxious.
But I'm still hip. No, yeah. I think, I love that you say that, but I think everyone thinks that about everyone.
Mm. Even the cool guys.
Even people like me, who there's a ripple in the room, and people are kind of nudging, but trying not to nudge visibly. It's really him.
I think it may be something, and that's why I love comedians so much.
Totally, exactly.
If comedians are people that if they weren't as anxious or insecure... they probably enjoy their lives a lot better.
They
wouldn't need to make jokes all the time.
They wouldn't be constantly watching other people to see what's...
Be ready to make fun of themselves and everybody else. Yeah, and it's being uncomfortable that makes you want to make a joke in the first place.
Totally.
I guess. Yeah.
No, and also, like, it is a bit about comedy, this book. For me, it was a bit about sort of... When I did comedy, it was very silly and there was no politics in it. And that was kind of my little... ideology that I had. It's just like, just make it silly. And that's what Woodhouse is like as well.
Yeah.
But in a weird way, it's hard to tell a story without that stuff becoming quite meaningful.
Yeah.
And also, I guess as you get older, you just think about those things and they creep in. And I often think about Woodhouse tried to avoid politics his entire life.
Wow.
But he did accidentally, in a very sort of Woodhousey, maybe in a kind of Edward Jevonsy way, accidentally do a broadcast on behalf of the Nazis. basically out of sort of politeness in sort of the late 30s, he was like, I don't really want to, but I mean, they've asked me. It was kind of that. And then everyone in England went, absolutely. They were like, don't do it for the Nazis. That's really bad. But he was like, honestly, if you'd been there, you probably would have said yes as well. It's like,
God.
And then so he moved to the States. And
what, to escape that?
Yeah.
And then
the most social anxious you can be. I'm just going to leave this country.
Yes, exactly.
No, it wasn't that bad. It was. Goodbye.
No, I did something for the Nazis. So
you should pack your bags. Yeah. Let me help you.
And then in his 80s, I mean, so that's why, like, Woodhouse in a way is nostalgia. It is nostalgia.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of the kind of, I mean, I think, Downton, it's this sort of nostalgia for something that was really a very sort of subjugating fantasy, but also wasn't really like that entirely.
No.
And so you can't escape the political element, but it is also just about how those power structures make us act in a conversation.
Mm. I love the genre of crime and of thriller, and I have never read anything that realistically talks about how someone might feel, and this isn't a spoiler because I'm not going to say who who, but actually committing a murder.
Yeah, it would feel bad, wouldn't it?
Getting rid of the body. That's what one of my terrors is, accidentally losing control.
Yeah, I can see that in you. I can see that in your
That's
eyes.
Why she reads all the thrillers.
Yeah.
I guess so.
So you can plan.
I was so with the character while
so
it was happening.
So with him. It's such a good read. It really is. And again,
so nice.
Someone who doesn't lean towards thrillers at all. I think it's a sweet spot between people who like Woodhouse and Austin.
You could
like
a thriller. Because it's so funny, you can read it. If you love comedy.
But also it's not folk, like, what the reason I don't love thrillers is because it's like the spotlight isn't tied on how does it feel to kill someone? Whereas this is like character, story, all this other stuff, plus
But they never examine it properly how it would feel.
Yeah.
They try to show you, usually what they do is say it's a person who's different from you who does this. This felt like it was someone who is exactly like
me. Yes, which is why it was so...
Horrible.
Yes,
that's
great. I did.
You're so nice. You're so kind. I haven't really talked to it, apart from my dad, you know, haven't really talked to him about it. That's good. That's really nice. Because I sort of think that's almost the joke of it as well. Yeah. Is like, because going back to it being funny, it's almost the joke of it that imagine if we were just so people-pleasy, us three, that we did sort of go, I'm going to just... I really don't want to, but trying to make that feel emotionally...
The Nazis have asked you to do what?
Yeah.
I know, but...
They know I'm free on Monday.
I couldn't get out of it.
I love reading people's acknowledgements at the back. Because I've got an ego, I do always think... Even people that have been long dead since I was born. Just in case. But I loved... So you did have people who had first readers. I'm impressed when you've had... So you had six first readers.
With that as well.
And look at this list.
Yeah, I thought exactly the same thing.
Did you?
It was so funny. That's a bloody good list for first readers.
I know. And it's funny because you've got... So people like Hugh Skinner there...
And Emerald Fennell.
But I was thinking about W1A and that character that you played, and because that kind of tone of speech, this sort of style that I sort of thought that John, the writer, had invented, which is when you're agreeing but you say no a lot in the agreement.
Oh, so that's psychologically, how posh people talk.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, absolutely. Mm. And they're sort of shaking their head while agreeing to do something.
Well, I think it's what I do when I'm people pleasing.
Oh, really?
I will sort of nod along at almost anything. Almost anything. And there's a bit in the book which happened in real life.
God, that must be so hard, though.
I'm actually much better at it now because my wife, it was just very strict with me and just saying, it's weird that you're saying yes when you mean no.
I was like,
true, actually. Why? That's because it's opposite. It's the opposite of what I'm trying to say. But there's a bit in the book which happened in real life where I went to a friend's house and they had a kind of fancy dinner with waiters.
Oh,
and it was fancy.
Yeah.
And I was I found it quite nerve-wracking. And anyway, the dad just assumed I was a waiter.
Oh, no.
And it just sort of went, just get on with it, get the pace. And he was really nice. He wasn't, like, treating the staff badly.
No,
he was
but it was just very clear, your role.
I was like, absolutely. Okie dokie. I was sort of processing,
because if they didn't have waiters and you turned up at someone's house and they said, oh, could you pop that in the fridge for me? Of course you would, because they're the host, you're the guest. You know, do you want any help washing up? But it's the staff element.
If you're socially
anxious...
It's like,
why am I omitting staff?
Yeah, no, because you're socially anxious. And what you're always looking for is a job. Give me a job.
And that's why
at dinner parties, I am the tidier because I'm like, something to do. Mm. And so I think you probably looked like, God, tell me what to do. And he was like, oh, tidy up. And you were like, yeah, okay. Because
totally.
Now I've got a thing to do rather than like, you're
there's a waiter. I have to stand here while someone gets me a drink. This is so weird.
Again, yeah, waiting was easier than the conversation.
Yeah, and then you have to think what to say to someone. You have to panic.
And someone said, you're a comedian at that dinner. I'm actually having like PTSD.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, yes, I'm a comedian. and she said, that's so interesting because you're not funny, are you? And I was like, No, not massively.
Oh, God. That's so unfair because you are funny, but not around people who are scary and making you anxious.
Mitch used to have this amazing bit about how it's only with comedy where they're like, oh, do some, or you're not funny. It's like, never say to a builder, I've not seen you build anything.
I know, you've been
sitting here for hours. Yeah. Where's the wall?
Where's my numbers? Here's my tax. I know, it's outrageous.
You don't even have your tools with you.
I know. Our main character, Edward, does lots of things that make you feel very uncomfortable, like, you know, being mistaken for a waiter and being with these horrible posh people who are mean to him. But at the same time, I did feel like I could see myself going, I'll get your dry cleaning.
The subtlety of the meanness.
Yeah, no worries, mate. And the way the men spoke to each other. All right, mate. Oh, of course. No, you're like this weird, like not addressing anything.
But we're finding out about it through Edward's version of it. So we're getting what's spoken and what he's assuming.
Yeah.
And sometimes that very clever thing where we're seeing what he reads from Robert's eyes.
It reminds me of Peep Show as well, actually. You know, like Mark's character in Peep Show sometimes when it's good. Like, something is said to him and he's like, that'll be nice, it'll be awful. And you're like, why have you said yes to this thing that's going to break your heart?
Yeah, and I think you are so in his head that my kind of hope was that, you know, you kind of... hopefully the book allows you to think that these other characters are essentially sort of evil and deserve coming from them. Well, no, we should talk about that. Because really, no, I think he's the mad evil.
Yes.
And that's how I feel about that, you know, when we're talking about our relationship to class and, you know, why Downton Abbey was at its peak during austerity and all these things is actually we're the kind of mad ones. And Edward really is the madder.
Yeah.
But he, because he's... letting them, their only real crime is allowing him to be deferential.
Yes, and they do sort of apologise while then reinforcing his role. It's like, I'm really sorry, I should be getting you to do this. But also, could you get the table decorations
for
engagement?
I think it's the lack of empathy. Like with his two best friends, Robert and Stanza, who feature hugely in Edward's story.
Constanza.
Yes. What? You know what? I actually met a Constanza and I thought, that's fantastic. and I haven't sort of seen her since I've put her in the book.
For ages I was like, wow, is it like a literary family?
Exactly. No, it feels literary, doesn't it?
And Costanza, I was like, oh yeah, it makes more sense.
But only a little bit more sense.
Only a little bit more
sense. Yeah, slightly. Yeah. Yeah. It's also stanza means room, and I kind of like the idea that...
Oh, you know, nice.
But
ooh, that's a little Easter egg nugget from there.
There were several words in here I don't know what they mean. And I had to do that thing where you look up, and I was like, Cambridge. Did you do English at Cambridge?
I did, yeah.
Yeah, English at Cambridge.
I did do Italian, but I was asked to leave the course because I had not... I think she wrote a report where she said, you have failed to learn a single word of Italian after like 8 weeks. I was like, yeah, that does sound bad. Well, I will stop.
So sorry to bother you.
In our first term, they were like, well, you've got to read... It was Freshers' Week, and they were like, well, by the end of this week, you've got to read Canterbury Tales.
What?
And I was like, well, that's A, it's absolute gobbledygook.
Yeah, it's
like,
and it's huge. It's not even one Canterbury Tale. The whole thing.
Tales.
Yeah. Oh, God.
And then Piers Plowman, which is in sort of, it's in like Viking runes. I was read this. And I wrote the essay without reading it, but then I did read it before the kind of, you know,
seminar,
class about it.
Yeah.
And he asked me some questions about it because it was so baffling to me. He assumed I hadn't actually read it and threw me out and said I had no right to be at Cambridge. I was like, well, the thing is, I have read it, but it is, you've got to admit, it's gobbledygook. even you.
That's really hard when you're like, no, I actually have done the work and I still didn't understand it.
Yeah. I was.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Can I tell you a joke I really love in your book?
Oh, yeah.
And I loved it so much, like, I sort of sat down. My baby was sleeping, so I was reading on the stairs, and I sort of closed the book to just enjoy it, even though I didn't even quite understand it. I had to sort of work it out by myself. It was a joke where Edward's character comes back into the room, and I think they're at Terry's house, Stan's his dad's, and everyone's sort of having their first drinks, and Edward says, I'm paraphrasing, but something like, oh, brilliant, like, you've opened the bolly, and everybody laughed because it was, is it Krug?
Yeah. It was Krug, yeah.
And so I was like, bolly, it's not Bollywood, oh, it's Bollinger. I worked it out, and then I was like, I've never heard of Krug, but I was like, that's such a funny joke.
Oh, good. Yeah. That's hilarious.
I loved that joke as well, because it really...
So is Krug a really nice champagne?
I believe so. I mean, I have no idea either.
Yeah, I think it's posher than bolly.
I know bolly because of Absolutely Fabulous.
Yeah, fab, that's why I think.
And because I judged a competition, the comedy novel competition about 7 years ago, and it wasn't paid, but you got 6 bottles of Bollinger, but they found out I was a vegan and wouldn't give it to me.
Wow, yeah,
it's like strained through fish or something. And I'm not that vegan, come on, but
you could have given it away.
Strained through fish.
They used fish scales.
I thought I tasted it.
Just shove a bit.
That's why they everyone drinks Krug.
Yeah. Can I ask, so how do you read? So, I mean, you reading with children, this is, this is cuttable.
It's a nightmare.
But it's very, you must have to read a lot for this.
We do. It's very stressful. We message each other about trying to get through.
Yeah, like wanging
what we're doing.
Through all these books.
I should tell you what I got with my Christmas voucher from my husband from Waterstones. Is I got one of those clip-on lights.
Yeah, they are good.
So
my
baby doesn't sleep for very long, so I can't do anything anyway.
Yes.
So in his sort of 45-minute rest, I sit next to him with a little light on and do my reading.
That's good. I did most of my reading recently when my youngest didn't sleep.
Yeah.
Okay, that's reassuring.
Because there's no point going to sleep because they're going to wake you up again and then you feel mad.
And you can't sleep anyway even if they do sleep.
I got a Kindle. That's how I got through it. Sometimes bedtimes involve me sitting by a bed for 45 minutes.
You're not reading this to your children.
Oh yeah, they loved it. My son's little face. What are you doing? What the light? What the book saying? And I'll be like, I really can't tell you what this book is saying right now.
It will upset you.
It will upset you.
Have you read the audio book of this?
Oh yeah.
Did you read it?
No, I didn't read it. I did, however, sort of semi-audition for it.
And they said,
they have got someone fantastic, Jack Davenport. He's actually, and he was actually in
he's amazing.
The Talent of Mr. Ripley.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. He
is extremely good.
He's a great choice.
Good.
I think his voice is going to be lovely. Not that you would also have been lovely.
Well, I can only do, and I used to find this in auditions as an actor, when they'd say, that's great. Could you do it in a slightly different accent? And I'd say, no, I can't.
No, yeah,
and they'd be like, well, it's lovely to see you and have a good journey home. And that was sort of it with this as well. If there are other characters, they'd also sound exactly like me.
Yeah. Oh,
also,
I did have to read my audiobook. Mm. And the same thing, accents, I can't do them. So I would occasionally have to sort of say, how will they know their characters Irish? Can I just add an extra line in? Because the Irish character sounds like she's from Essex, as do all the characters.
That's the problem.
That's sad, because I can do accents, but there were none in my non-fiction book.
Oh, just put some patois in there.
Could have read a chapter in. I once auditioned for a very gritty period Irish film, and I did a lot of voice work sort of in the day before, and the woman holding the audition was corpsing all the way through my audition. And I started corpsing. No, it was a beautiful moment.
Yes,
I was like,
yes,
this is such a sweet moment. And I was really like, that was almost kind of romantic.
Yeah.
And then I went home thinking, no, that was awful for my career.
I once had to audition for something and the character had to play the ukulele. And they had suggested a song, which was too hard for me to learn so
Captain
quickly.
Captain
So I'd played them a different song. And I didn't even know how bad it was until the casting director ran out of the room to give me a hug. I thought it had gone fine. And she ran out and she went, oh God, darling.
Poor you.
Yeah.
That's really bad.
And that's when I realised it had been shit. thing I liked from the acknowledgements.
We're only talking about acknowledgements.
I'm so happy to dig into these.
Well, it's because I don't want to go too much into plot. I wanted to do broad things. The stuff in my head was, yes, class, university, which we've covered. I want to talk about love or not of thrillers. Sophie, who's your wife, that's not a spoiler. She was the one who made you write the book.
Oh yeah, I thought that was a nice way.
Yeah, she did.
That's lovely.
I want to know how.
No, it was really good actually. She just because I wanted to write a book for ages, and she just got really bored of me
saying it.
And she just looked at me with such kind of such a shaming look of disgust, and said, "Just write it then." And I was like, "Yeah, but what about you know? It'll take ages, and it'll be unpaid work." And she said, "It's fine." And it was really irresponsible financially. I mean, it was in some ways a terrible decision to just take that gamble. But I just needed someone to say to do it.
I really love that story. And I tell you for why. Because lots of people listening might want to write a book one day, and they're waiting for validation. Yeah. They're waiting for someone to say, your idea is so fantastic. Yes. You are so talented. The world needs to hear from you. And it's not. It's just a wife's derision.
That's all it takes.
Yeah, just go on then.
But also somebody just saying, just do it.
Yeah, I should say. I'm being a bit silly. But she was also like, yeah, you should. And I think it's right that you should write it anyway.
Yeah.
And I was happy just to have written it before getting published.
So did you write all of it and then take it to publishers?
Oh, that's exciting.
That's what Richard Osman did as well.
Oh, that's very clever.
That's very clever.
Well, yeah,
I actually think that's audacious.
Andrew Hunter Murray did that, wrote the whole thing and then took it.
I think it's hard not to do that. I think it would have been hard for me to sell a book, actually, unless it had been finished. But also, it was hard for me to write a book without finishing it. Because in a weird way, I wrote it on the sort of second and third goes through and knowing what the ending was and...
Yeah,
things like that help me to write it.
If you do the opposite, where you pitch and then write it, your editor gets feedback the whole way through, which is very difficult if you do have a very clear idea of what you want to write.
Yeah, I think that's the other.
You're going no.
You're coming in a much feedback, like a stronger position of control, because you've gone through all the mistakes and you've gone through all the. It could be this. It could be that. So when then someone goes, "Oh, what about this?" You can be like, "No, I tried that.
I tried
to write that, but it didn't work like that."
True, because I'm writing the second one now, and I have had to sort of describe.
Is it the same character?
It's not a sequel. No. I would quite like to write a sequel, actually.
You can revisit him in a decade or so.
Yeah. When he's sort of in Parliament or something. Hold on, get a pen. And the funny thing about describing a book is you do go into pitch mode.
Mm.
So I was sort of going, a lot of my description was, it's fantastic. And it doesn't really help you, but you feel like you have to convince someone. But actually, when you're writing, you just have to write it and sort of work it out in that fairly painful
way. So you wrote it, was it during the lockdowns? That's when it...
No, I started before the lockdown, but the lockdown was very useful, I think. I think I kind of underestimated how useful it was being unable to sort of see anyone or do anything. And I had a sitcom cancelled because of lockdown, so I had more time. It was all quite good, actually. And I think I had more anger rippling around for Boris and whatnot.
There's something very claustrophobic about a character who can't get out of his situation. Mm. You desperately want him to. I wonder if that's the transference.
Yeah, that's true.
Lockdown, because whether you were actually in your home or whether you were working, the entire country, the entire world had that bubbling frustration of, I don't get to make my decisions anymore. I thought I was in charge of my life and I'm not. Mm. The world isn't fair.
Yes. And more powerful people will dictate what you do. Absolutely.
And we go, okay, then I won't do that thing. I'll wash my hands. Goodbye. Thanks so much. Where are you going? Looks like a party. What's happening? Oh, don't worry about it. Okay. Where do you want your dry cleaning? Yeah.
I mean, in lockdown, I think we would have been less, I don't know how it played out, but if someone had said, Boris is getting lashed behind the scenes, I think a lot of us would have been like, I would have thought he would be.
It was the covering up. I do think that it was the covering up that made people go, we fucking knew you were, but you don't lie. Try and hide it, you bastards.
Well, don't make the rules then. If you know everyone wants to get pissed, make that part of the rules.
I would be up for someone saying, look, you guys cannot do this, but we are running the country and it's really stressful. So once every fortnight, we're getting lashed. Just let it go.
Or maybe just like an optional thing. Okay, fine. If you want to meet up, and get pissed at your friend's garden and take up smoking again, fine. But you can't use the NHS.
No,
and
I'll just
go, yeah, all right, fine.
That would have to apply. Yeah, that would have had to apply to them as well. They would, if they were getting lashed, they would have to not lose the NHS.
And they'd go, yeah, this is terrible.
And they'd go, we don't anyway. We're all on private healthcare. So we've gone, oh, well, that makes a lot of sense. Thank you for being honest about it. There are so many moments in this book where you are screaming at Edward. There's so many moments where you're like, don't do that. Why are you doing that?
But he's screaming at himself.
I know. That's
what I love about it. So, usually you get a first person narrator and you're sort of in their head, but it's so surface. I feel like this was so much deeper than that. And that's the true tragedy of really seeing he doesn't want to do this. He knows at the same time.
That's why I think thriller is like not quite. It is a tragedy.
It's where the money is carried. Like, right? It's a thriller.
Yeah, sorry, it's a thriller. But like that Shakespearean.
It's the new Richard Osman, remember?
That like Shakespearean
it's
element.
It's the new Harry Potter.
No, we must never.
It's going to sell in a similar.
But it had that Shakespearean element of like watching this main character do things that you know are going to end awfully.
Because, again, no spoilers, because of the way the book started and because it's called... Oh, and actually, so is it... This is like the Da Vinci Code, the Kelleby Code.
The Kelleby Code. Yeah. It's actually like the Code of the Worcesters.
Were you inspired by the Da Vinci Code?
It's actually a transcription. And it's amazing you didn't spot this.
Well, some people will be like, oh, Dan Brown's got a new one.
That would be a real disappointment if they're expecting Dan.
Sales-wise, it would.
No, it's great. Get off the shelf.
Yeah. Oh, I see. It's a Jeeves and Worcester. Because I thought it was a Da Vinci Code thing and kept waiting for him to find
Jeeves.
Some ancient monk.
Yeah, it's a chalice. So right at the beginning, you know, Edward finds something in the soil. I thought, oh, here's the chalice.
That's amazing.
Off he goes. Amazing.
Why has he not mentioned a chalice? God, that needs to come
I really soon. Thought this was going to be a book about a downtrodden friend who's going to come out on top and get everything that he deserves.
That's why I enjoyed it.
Literary thriller is a genre.
Secret history is a sort of thriller where
Carriad hasn't read The Secret History.
You would love it.
When we started this podcast, I was rereading it and it's one of the ones where I said, this will be so fun to talk about.
Yeah, but imagine the fucking pile at the side of the bed. Okay, it got so big. So one pile to be read.
It's thick.
I started another one of like actual podcast coming up, have to read, ignore this. That got bigger than the other one, and I went to bed one night and looked at them. And I was like, they're going to fall over and kill me. That's what's going to happen. So I've had to put all of them on the floor because it was so death by book. And
it's like someone going, oh, I've got so much money. I've got so much money in the bank. I had to put some more money in a different savings account, and then I have to hide that from myself because I get so stressed. I don't want to spend all my money. It's books. They last forever.
I know, but Secret History is on their pile. That's what I mean.
So good.
And it's had to go right down to the bottom.
Do you find it hard with Kindles? That you don't know how long, because I find I read The Information, which is quite long. When Martin Amis died, I read that was one of his books, and it's just much longer than I sort of hope a book will ever be.
I
did enjoy it, but it just took took ages. And then now I'm reading The Name of the Rose. It's feeling big.
Yeah, it's very big. Yeah.
Oh, right, so you mean like on a Kindle?
You don't know. Yeah. And you're sort of just wading through the dark.
Well, as we've discussed, if it's a big book, I go Kindle. So like Mirror in the Light, Kindle.
But Martin Amis is another person that I've mentioned that I'd love us to talk about on the podcast. She's swerving.
I don't like him.
Yeah, no,
which
that's
why
very
I think
common.
But I think it'll be interesting.
It'd be worth talking about.
Because you know who made me read him? Dolly Alderton, a woman.
A woman.
No, we wouldn't read Martin Amis.
I think we'd have an interesting discussion.
We would, but then I don't want to get all shouty like I did with Nick Hornby.
I don't think you will be.
He was really used to being shouted at.
I know, and that annoys me as well.
And I think Martin Amis is worth talking about. Because he is shoutable at.
I'm not saying he's not worth talking about. I'm
not saying he's not a literary figure.
I'm just saying I can't be arsed.
There's a trade-off. I think how much you think you're going to find things annoying will be balanced by he's really in control of what he's saying, and you'll appreciate.
I have no doubt that he's amazing, but when your TBR pile is so big you think it's going to kill you, trying to put someone on there that you're like, okay.
Einstein's Monsters, his book of short stories.
Yeah, we could do that.
Because they're less, I think you'd find them less shoutable at as well.
Okay,
great, let's do that. It's a plan. Right.
And I'll come back.
Hang on a minute.
I'm vigilate. I'm going to host.
We lost the podcast. I guess it was a very upsetting situation.
Oh, it was classic. A white privileged man from Cambridge came.
And he knew just so many more words.
Yeah.
And even though we discussed Marxism, it didn't make any difference. People wanted to hear him over us.
Do you know what really helped my to read pile?
Mm.
When we interviewed Satnam Sangera because he, in his book, talks a little bit sort of negatively about Niall Ferguson, and I've got sort of six, and I just gave them all to the charity shop.
That's good.
Yeah.
That show is amazing, and I love him.
He's amazing.
He's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So good. It's really helpful when really clever people write books, and then you understand things a little bit better.
They make enjoyable to be cleverer.
Keep doing it. Yeah. Johnny, it's excellent. We really enjoyed it.
Is there anything you hoped we'd ask that we haven't?
Mm.
I just would have been sad if we hadn't gone through the acknowledgements. It's good that they've been given fairly weighty.
Well, when you get to actually talk to the person who wrote the book, because most of the time you don't. I just have
And it's true, we don't want to do spoilers, because I really enjoyed not knowing what was going
to
happen.
It's hard. It's the hard to talk about the book with the spoilers. I found that difficult.
Yeah. Is Emerald Fennell going to do a film of it?
She sort of already has done. That's the funny thing with Saltburn.
I haven't seen Saltburn.
Oh, are you suggesting she did a first read and then she made Saltburn?
I don't know. What was really funny was, the reason she did read it is because we met up and she was casting Saltburn. And I said, what's the film about? And she described it and I went, well, I'm going to have to say my book's quite similar. And so we exchanged. I read the script and she read the book after they were both finished.
Oh, nice. Wow. That's so fantastic, isn't it?
Yeah. So it was...
That's the kind of thing that will be in a biography one day.
Yeah.
There'll be probably a blue hers. Plaque. So.
It'll be lovely. Like, oh, Virginia Woolf. Virginia Woolf knew so-and-so. Johnny Sweet.
Yeah, not so-and-so. Sir.
MP for Uxbridge.
Doctor Sir MP Sweet.
He writes in Italian these days, actually. Just only Italian.
Yeah.
It's not great Italian, but it's nice to read them.
And we must talk very quickly about your film.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Wicked Little Letters.
Yeah, it's a bit of an overachiever, aren't you?
Yeah, I triumph almost every day. I just waft around, high-fiving myself. That's already out. So if you've seen it and liked it,
you'll like the book. Yeah, you like your style.
It's so different from the book in style, actually.
Oh, okay.
I mean, the film is so silly. The book is silly as well, but the book, like you say, is more emotionally aware.
I've only seen the advert for your film, but I would say what would be similar is very adult world, like the real world and real things going on, but with incredible jokes.
That's fantastic. And that's a wrap.
I know, I need to end on that.
You won't be coming back for the next one. I'll be hosting that. But I think up to now you've done a great job. I really do.
We normally end on the last line, and I think we should.
One?
Yeah. Here we go.
Brilliant.
It's good. So, most of all, I'd like to thank Sophie for making me write it and for everything. That's from the acknowledgements, and it really was a wonderful sentence.
Yeah.
That's lovely. I'm actually genuinely very pleased we ended with that. It's good.
Thank you for listening to the Weirdos Book Club.
Next week's book guest is A Man's Place by Annie Arnaud.
Sarah's novel Weirdo and Carrie Ed's book You Are Not Alone are both available now.
I've got some Weirdo book events if you want to check out my website, sarahpascoe.co.uk.
Thank you for reading with us. We like reading with you.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hi, I'm Lucy Beaumont.
And guess what? I'm Sam Campbell.
If you've enjoyed this podcast, you might enjoy our podcast. It's called Lucy and Sam's Perfect Brains.
We have a podcast and... it might be, I probably don't want to sound, like I'm bragging, but it's dynamite. It is electric. It's high voltage. And please, we really need you to listen. You don't understand how much we need this.
Is it on all the platforms?
Oh, it absolutely is. But this one is coming. This one's out now. Lucy and Sam's Perfect Brains.